So tonight, I thought I'd talk about spiritual intelligence. What it is, what I mean by that, and I'm not entirely sure I yet know what I mean by that, but hopefully by the end of the talk I will, and perhaps you will too. What spiritual intelligence is, why it's so worthwhile developing it, how to develop it, and the benefits of developing spiritual intelligence. So I thought I'd begin with a story. There was a young man who was very unhappy, very depressed, didn't have a girlfriend. In fact, he didn't have anything, really. He was going from dead-end job to dead-end job, and his life was pretty miserable, and he wanted a solution. He wanted an answer to the problem of suffering. He got very interested in meditation. He tried various forms of meditation. He became very attracted to a particular form of Buddhism that he wanted to make much of. But he was the sort of guy who wanted to do it himself, didn't want to accept instruction, never had really accepted instruction from anyone, and wasn't about to begin. But it got to the point where he was so unhappy, and his attempts at meditation were so unsatisfactory, that eventually he reached a point where he relented. He said, right, I've got to find a teacher. To cut a long story short, eventually he read a book by someone that he regarded, from reading the book, as highly evolved, whatever that means. I don't think it really means anything, but someone that he considered to be enlightened. And he plucked up the courage to go and meet this particular meditation teacher. And so he came to meet the teacher, and which was a big deal for him. It was a big change in his attitude. And he sat down with the teacher, and very soon, through just chatting with the teacher, really felt that this was his teacher. He'd found his teacher. And so after a discussion, it was decided that the very best thing was for this young man to come in for full-time training, to train full-time. And that was really what the young man wanted. They agreed upon it. But the teacher said one thing. He said, we're not a vegetarian organisation here. Do you have any difficulty with that? And the young man paused, considered, and then said, I've been a vegetarian for 15 years, but I'm so unhappy that it really just isn't important compared with what I could have through training full time. So, no, I'll just accept whatever I'm given to eat. And the teacher said, fine, that's good. In that case, you're very welcome to come in. So the young man left. The meditation centre was on a hill. And so he went down the hill, happier than he had been for a very long time, full of confidence, because suddenly a doorway had been opened, thrown open. There was now fresh potential in his life. There was a direction. He had an aspiration, and he felt, with the teacher's guidance, that there was a possibility of really coming to understand life and understanding how to meditate properly. So he jumped on a train to go back to his hometown. And after a couple of stops, this very attractive young lady with a bike got on the train, and he thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if she came down and sat next to me? Which she did. And he was more confident than he'd been in for years. And the conversation just flowed. It was the most natural, normal thing in the world, apparently. And eventually, they both got off at the same train station. And the young man thought, shall I ask for her number? And he didn't, because the thought suddenly occurred to him, what did I just agree to an hour ago? So he didn't ask for her number. He let her go. Well, the good news is he did fulfil his ambition of entering into full-time training, And by all accounts, he did very well. So that's very good. The moral of the story, he showed what can only be described as spiritual intelligence. And of the various things, you think, thinking about it actually, there must have been something in the stars that day, because he did rather develop quite a lot in one day, didn't he? He let go of a view he had about eating certain foods. He gave up the possibility of potential for a relationship. But I think most importantly, he had given up his self-reliance, his self-determination. He hadn't given up his determination. He had realised that he had gone as far as he could without guidance, without help. And for that particular meditator, that was a biggie. Not saying that's a biggie for everyone. There are meditators who, students who take instruction very easily and very well. But for them, perhaps it's something else. But for this particular young man, giving up his self-reliance was a big deal. What has this got to do with anything? It's got a lot to do with what we do here. Spiritual intelligence, I should just point out, has nothing to do with intellectuality. Spiritual intelligence has absolutely nothing to do with whether you're clever or not. All right, I speak for myself. Spiritual intelligence, as the story suggests, is something else. It's a way of relating to your inner world, to your inner experience. Bringing it right bang up to date. We're all here because the Buddha taught this way to enlightenment, a way to freedom from suffering. He said of his teaching that it had only one function, to show people how to free themselves from suffering. So we mean that by that all forms of anxiety, fear, depression, the whole bag of neurotic tendencies that people carry about with them. It is possible to be completely free of all of that. He understood through his own endeavours that suffering was always caused through craving for life to be different than it is, as we are all aware, and that craving is based in a fundamental ignorance of the way life really is. And so the whole purpose of his training is to get the individual to stop always wanting life to be different and pay exquisite attention to the way it is. And to do that requires great spiritual intelligence. I've done really well, I haven't looked at my cards once yet. This isn't easy. Last week, for you, those of you who weren't here last week at the beginning, before we did the meditation, I tried to describe what it is that you actually do in the meditation. So, just to recap, actually taking you through it, into it. It's actually being, can you be aware now of the sounds? Or aware of the peace? Can you be aware of the temperature of your body? Perhaps there are thoughts going through your head like, what's he doing? Or, oh yeah, I see. Now what we did, that's all I did to introduce last week's meditation. The question is, how long was somebody able just to remain in that space? Meditation is really quite simple. It's just literally paying attention to what is. whatever arises in this moment. But how long is it until the mind just goes off into a daydream? Or how quickly does one's body slump as you fall into a slothful state? Or how soon is it before you're manipulating the mind because you've discovered some irritation and you don't want it to be there because it shouldn't be there and you want it to go away and you start wrestling with the mind? I'd suggest for most people it's not very long at all. But as somebody develops, as they keep practicing meditation, as they keep training in this way, the ability to remain in that zone where you're literally just present, alert, noting, observing all the physical and mental phenomena that's arising and passing away, the ability to do that grows. It's like you grow meditative muscles. That's spiritual intelligence. So it would have been lovely if all the Buddha had to do was just to say, rest content in the moment and watch the arising and passing away of things. If that was all that was required, that's brilliant, because that meant that everyone would be able to do that and do that successfully, and everyone would become enlightened really very quickly, because it isn't that difficult once you know where to place your attention. However, he didn't. He couldn't, because he understood human nature through and through. He understood that human beings are completely caught up in their cravings. They're completely caught up in their ignorance. And this creates a tremendous bias and distortion for people. So we are beset by hindrances. So we have to learn how to put those hindrances to one side. We have to learn how to develop our spiritual intelligence to be able to do that. So the Buddha's teaching is far more comprehensive, because it has to be. There's nothing missing from his teaching, and there's nothing which is too much. There is just exactly what you need in order to become enlightened, to develop this spiritual intelligence. So what do I mean by spiritual intelligence? How can we define it? We can define it in terms of what the Buddha called the five spiritual faculties. And I hope you all know what the five spiritual faculties are, but to remind you, they are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and investigation. If somebody has all five of those mental qualities, well, everyone has those mental qualities, you don't have to create them. You already have them. But if somebody has them fully matured, then they have great spiritual intelligence. If they have them fully matured, it means that they can rest content in the moment and watch the arising and passing away of events till the cows come home. They have the mindfulness, which is the choiceless awareness of whatever occurs in the moment. So there's no picking and choosing, there's just the examination of what is. That examination is the investigation. Now that requires great faith, because you have to have the faith to let whatever wants to come in, and not believe that it shouldn't be there. You have to have great faith in the workings of the universe, and great faith in your own abilities. That faith is confidence, it's a trusting. So there has to be a great maturing of faith. As I was talking about earlier, there has to be great resolve to practice. That resolve is, could be said in some ways, to be energy. You have to be prepared to exert energy, to properly sort out what it is that you're going to do, and then be determined to do it. And once in the meditation, you have to hold that beautiful space between not trying hard enough and trying too hard. And for a lot of meditators, there's this balancing that has to happen, where you learn where the balance of energy is. You have to have that fully matured and fully developed just to remain in the moment. And of course, you have to have concentration. The mind is so flighty, it runs wherever it wants to, flies to wherever it wants to, and you have to develop the capacity for focus, non-distraction, so that you remain in the moment. So the development of the five spiritual faculties is spiritual intelligence. And if you develop one faculty, you necessarily develop them all. For instance, if it's going to be choiceless awareness of whatever's happening in the moment, that requires great faith. If if you're going to observe the way in which events arise and pass away, so investigating your experience, there has to be great levels of concentration, non-distraction, the ability to focus. And there has to be clear comprehension, another facet of investigation or wisdom. There has to be the clear comprehension of what it is you're actually looking at. So that implies a willingness to perhaps do a little bit of study and get a few of the lists under your belt, which requires putting some energy in, being a bit more dedicated about it. So you see, so as you develop one aspect, you develop them all. But there's more to spiritual intelligence than that. Because it could be so easy for somebody just to give up. Think, well, it's too hard, I can't do it. My mind's just too flighty, it just goes all over the place. I'm beset with doubts. I get headaches when I meditate. I'm so forgetful, I lose track of where I am. I get so easily distracted. I don't even know what it is really I'm supposed to be doing. It's all too much, I won't bother. In order to develop the five spiritual faculties, you also have to develop what are called the parami, the perfections in Buddhism. It all fits together. This is really what the young man in my story was doing. He wasn't specifically meditating at that point. What he was doing was, how to put this? He was developing the capacity to give of himself. Normally when we talk about the paramis, we talk about things like generosity, being of service to others, practicing loving kindness, in thought, word and deed, all of which, I think you agree, is giving of yourself. It's putting other people first and being less bothered about yourself and your own needs and your own wants. And that's critical for developing the spiritual faculties. Because what prevents the development of the spiritual faculties are the hindrances. And the hindrances are the ultimate in self-concern. Where we're very concerned for ourselves, above and beyond anything else. So part of the training is in learning how to put aside one's own wants, one's own concerns, for the benefit of someone or something else. So normally, we talk about the paramis in terms of compassionate activities for other people, but there is another aspect to this, which is giving oneself over to the requirements of the training itself. I hope that makes sense. So it is recognizing the need for the meditator, recognizing his or her need to sacrifice something of themselves, to renounce something of themselves, to give up something of themselves for something greater, which is the training itself. And this is why recently, and I will continue to do, is make much of the parameters that are set up with the training, because they're not accidental, they're not arbitrary. The parameters of the training are such to help the student develop the capacity for letting go of their own concerns. So in the story, the young man did it on three occasions. He gave up the need for self-determination, recognizing the value in getting guidance. He gave up a precious view with regard to certain food. He gave it up for something that he regarded to be more important. And he gave up on establishing a relationship because it would be inappropriate given what he was intending to do, even though it was something that he had always wanted. But there was something that was more important. And that's so critically important for any meditator. So when it comes to the parameters of the training, we have keeping precepts. We have coming along regularly, Wednesday night meetings. Perhaps offering to help out at the centre from time to time, to help develop the service and generosity. Establishing ourselves in a loving, friendly attitude. Practicing meditation every day. Developing mindfulness as best one can throughout one's day. And as a minimum, coming on a week-long retreat once a year. As a minimum, of course, people can do more. Now, if I can remember, I've got a few examples of surrounding this, if I can remember them. But I don't think I wrote them here. What this training is challenging us to do is to renounce and sacrifice something that is meaningful to us. It's not asking us to sacrifice things that we find easy to give up. As a for instance, perhaps somebody is independently wealthy and they don't really have to work for a living. So coming on retreat, because they've got no holiday time or anything, they've got all the time in the world, they find it really easy to fulfil that 1 week on retreat. It's just not an issue. So they're not really giving up anything by fulfilling that part of the training. But as a wise man once said, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Perhaps the rich man would really struggle with accepting instruction, because one of the things that riches gives you is a strong independence. You don't have to kowtow to anyone, because you can always buy your way out of any issue. So they, although it might be very easy for that person to come on retreat because they're independently wealthy, they might find it very difficult accepting instruction. Do you get the general idea? So the training is designed, is set up as almost like a catch-all. It's quite brilliantly done, because there is bound to be something for you that you're reluctant to give up, you're reluctant to let go of. I wonder what it is. Well, with a fair few of you, I think I've got a very good idea. That's my job. But what that gives you is the visceral experience of letting go of something. Once you've done it the once, like the young man in the story, once he'd got over the big hurdle of self-determination and realising what benefit he would get from accepting instruction, he was then able to let go of other things. And that process continued. And that meant when it came to meditation, he was less self-concerned. Because he was less self-concerned, it was easier to put away hindering thoughts, because the hindering thoughts always rely on extreme self-concern. And that meant that he could look at anything that came up. He had the faith and the trust in life because he had abandoned things that he was clinging on to, thinking that I need this. Remember, attachment is an emotional dependency. We hold attachments for reasons, because we believe it's going to keep us safe, secure. But it doesn't actually do that. It creates terrible doubts and fears and anxieties. All mental problems in the world come from attachment and craving. So through learning, not intellectually, but through experience, that it was all right to let go, that it was all right to place his faith in a teacher, it was all right to follow the instruction as best he could, given, of course, the tendency to reconfigure the instruction in our own heads. But he did it as best he could, as far as he could, and it was that process of being able to let go which developed the spiritual faculties, to the degree that he was able to put the hindrances to one side, absence of self-concern. So that's spiritual intelligence. And it's that moment at which someone is faced with that terrible decision. Do I accept the instruction, or do I argue it? Do I let go, or do I seek self-determination? Which way is it going to go? Five spiritual faculties continue to become stronger, more well developed once we've set aside the hindrances, because that's not the end of the story. Once we've set aside the hindrances in meditation and we're learning, we've learned the trick of how to rest content in the moment, watching things arise and pass away, there is still a maturing of one's spiritual intelligence that has to go on. And that comes from practicing insight meditation, specifically. Because what insight meditation does is dig up the roots of the problem. There's this wrong view that some people hold, that the whole point of meditation is to reach this point of being free of hindrances, and then there's nothing more to do. Just as long as you know how to manage the mind, you're free of hindrances, that's the goal, that's the aim of Buddhist meditation, and it isn't. Because in no way, shape or form, although it gets rid of the conscious level of craving, it doesn't do anything about uprooting the deeply held emotional attachments to the world, and it doesn't do anything about dealing with really wrong views and misinformation and wrong understanding of life that creates suffering. So the five spiritual faculties continue to be developed as we go through the course of insight. And one of the major ways it does it is that as you keep watching things arise and pass away, it really does start to show you that your assumptions about the way you thought life was are wrong. And that does create quite I don't know how to extreme to be here, I don't want to put you off. It's like an existential conflict. Because your new way of seeing things is at loggerheads with your old way of seeing things. And there's this period of time when you're wrestling and fighting, and you're challenged by that. And it's that challenge that develops the spiritual faculties. Because you have to keep coming back to the chair, you have to keep on closing your eyes, keep on returning your attention again to the rise and fall of things, which does develop your faith, because the more you look at things arising and passing away due to conditions, the more you see you've got absolutely no control. The more you sit there watching the arising and passing away of things, the more you realise that all those distractions, those distracting thoughts, the substance of those thoughts is completely illusory. All those narratives saying, oh, that person shouldn't have done that to me in 1974, or I shouldn't have done that to them in 1976, or whatever it might be, it's all just illusion. The content of thinking is not real. And so one's concentration is matured because you simply do not allow yourself to become distracted. You transcend it. You grow, your strength, you grow in this ability to go, I'm not interested in that. It's like you start to give your full, complete, full attention. You give the whole of yourself to what you're doing. You're not divided. Well, shall I watch things rise and pass away, or shall I dream about next year's summer holiday? No, I'm going to do this. Your spiritual intelligence starts to grow and grow. As you see things arise and pass away, this tremendous equanimity develops. I think it's the recognition of the lack of control, really. But you simply let life be what it is. You stop constantly manipulating it. You just realise that life just has this natural order, and that you're not separate from that natural order. And so with that, a whole great deal of views comes to just be dislodged and dissolved. Like this idea of justice. Should have justice for all, rights for all. Politics just evaporates. The sense in which life is wrong and we've got to go off and do something about it just dissolves. Because you see that, no, it's just got its own order. And nobody's in control of that. So you end up with this delightful equanimity, peace, because you're not fighting. What is there to fight with? The very attempt to fight, you're fighting something that's already disappeared. You see it more and more. There is nothing to do. And so gradually, all the control gets loosened, the manipulation dies away. And these are deep-rooted behaviours that we've all engaged in an attempt to find peace and happiness. But the more you look at things arising and passing away, the more you realise you don't need any of that. And then everything gradually dissolves. So there's a challenge there, though, because we don't give up our deep-rooted emotional attachments easily. And so there are periods where there's a certain amount of restlessness and difficulty, and that's where resolve comes in. But by this point, really, generally speaking, meditators are so, from their own experience, they see that it is working so well that they're prepared to go through those difficulties. The point I'm trying to make is that through all this process, one is strengthening those five spiritual faculties. One is becoming more and more spiritually intelligent. I don't like the word spiritual, I don't know what it means really, but it's the best of a bad lot. Well, we haven't got spirits, have we? What's that? Anyway, the point being, though, that as you walk the Vipassana path, the insight path, those five faculties reach a point of maximum maturity where it really doesn't matter what comes up. You're so faithful, so mindful, so non-distracted, able to turn the mind to whatever arises in a completely balanced way, that you just let it all arise and pass away and watch and watch and watch. And eventually you come to a point of this development of spiritual intelligence where you are just looking, at everything, whatever comes up, it is known completely and understood completely for what it really is. And that's what eliminates all that ignorance and confusion that generates all the craving. You're left in a position where you are able, you have such power and control of the mind that you are just able to rest for an entire hour just watching things arise and passing away. Like it's the most normal thing in the world. And occasional thought will come up and it doesn't bother you. It's absolutely sublime. It's beautiful. So if you want to develop spiritual intelligence, you have to let go of self-reliance, of control, of manipulation. In short, you have to let go of self-concern. Self-concern, craving, resistance, ignorance, all generate stupidity. Whenever we develop mindfulness, whenever we develop any of the spiritual faculties, whenever we give of ourselves without expecting anything in return, we are developing spiritual intelligence. And eventually it reaches the point where you're just delightfully peaceful and tranquil and happy, and you see everything as it really is. There is one further step. Of course, once you have this perfect view and you're seeing life as it really is, people will then ask the question, well, am I enlightened or not? And that's the one final piece of stupidity. Because we only ask the question out of ignorance. And although we see life truly as it is, there is just this one slight sense of it is I that sees it as it really is. And that's the one last piece of ignorance that finally goes when, would you believe it or not, you finally give up, let go of the desire for enlightenment itself. And then there is the total comprehension of life as it really is. Then there is the complete comprehension that the universe is entirely intelligent. And it is indeed perfect. And that there was never anything that you had to do, but of course we know you did have to do that, all the spiritual training in order to find that out. But yes, you realise that what you thought was you and your intelligence is in actual fact just simply the universe, the intelligence of the universe, and there is no separation in any of it. And it is the most delightful comprehension. It leads to the most exquisite sense of peace, that no matter what's going on, there is always this sense of perfect contentment. And you've even transcended things, you've even transcended the five spiritual faculties. It's not dependent on having faith, because you don't have faith anymore. You don't even have perfect confidence. There's nothing to be confident about. It doesn't matter whether you continue to develop concentration or not. It's not something that can be lost. Because there's no craving for life to be different than it is, there's no self-concern. Mindfulness comes very, very easily. But of course, mindfulness is still a mental quality that arises and passes away. Enlightenment is not mindfulness. So you've transcended even the five spiritual faculties. I'm beginning to waffle. But yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is that this training will bite. It will find your weak spot. It will find where your deep-rooted emotional attachments actually are. And spiritual intelligence is the ability to recognize that and to go with it, not to reject it. I'll leave that with you to think about.